slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Texas, welcome into another Saturday morning edition of Playing Through on the Horn. I am Carl Mickelson. No Bob Ballew this week. We've got a special treat for you. Director of Golf for the City of Austin at Rory Kaiser, Jimmy Clay, and Lyons Municipal. Mr. Steve Hammond's going to join us for the full hour here on Playing Through. And just talk a little bit about what's going on locally here in golf. Obviously, we've got some Masters talk to clean up. And see where everything else goes. We'll catch up with Mr. Hammond and talk local golf, national golf, and maybe a little international golf to boot. Steve, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Carl. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Good to talk to you. Before we jump into the Masters, which I know we want to do, it's still fresh on everybody's minds. I mean, we were midway through the Masters on last week's show, and, you know, all the predictions we were bragging about, not many of them came through. Some of them did, some of them didn't, but dive in to what's happened locally there, Clay Kaiser in Muni. We were talking off the air about, you know, what COVID's interrupted so much. It's hard to remember, you know, what tournaments we had last year, what got moved, what got postponed. We had a November Masters. We didn't have a firecracker last year, but you mentioned qualifiers are sneaking up on us for the firecracker. So it'll be good. That'll be a very important return to normalcy. That's a great bedrock event. The Firecracker Open there that plays it every 4th of July weekend. So tell us what's happening with Firecracker and qualifiers and things like that.
Well, with cases slowing down, we are fully intending on having the Firecracker qualifiers in June. We're with the full Firecracker field going in that first weekend in July. What's really exciting about it is this is going to be our first city-sponsored event since the COVID hit. You know, last year, last March, it was whenever it really took a toll on our operations. We had to strike stuff off the calendar. We didn't know when we would reopen, or two, what our tournament schedule looked like. But our tournament schedule has always been a very popular schedule.
Right.
Very much sought after events, whether or not it's the Spring Partnership, whether or not it's the Firecracker or even the Men's City Championship. All of those fields, we have over 135, 140 players. That is a really large field that you can't sleep on those events because there's just so much great talent in there, and they're fun to come out for people to watch. We don't know what the spectator capacity is going to be like for the Firecracker this year. Generally, it garners as many people to come watch that event as anything else. So we don't know what that's going to look like yet, and that's going to be based on the Austin caseload. And but we're really excited about having that event to at least crown that champion. We know we've missed 2020, but we're going to we fully intend and fully anticipate having the Firecracker 2021 this year, and are very, very excited about it.
That's very cool. I've been a spectator. I guess I was reporting. I was taking notes, but I remember there were years where would bring my dog on a leash out there, and it's just good to see good golf. I mean, you see so much mediocre golf at Lyons, so many other times when everybody in the field is just striping it. You know, it's just cool to sit on 16 and just kind of walk the back nine backwards. And I just remember, you know, what's great about that event is it a high school event. A high school kid could win the Firecracker, or a guy, you know, in his late 40s could climb up there and be dominant. You don't know who's you know it's going to be a good field. You never know who's going to come out on top.
That's what Lyons is. It's a great equalizer. Back in the 90s, I think Brendan Redfern was 13 or 14 when he won the Firecracker.
Yeah,
it's 6,000 yard golf course. The you talk about the talent level that's in that. We're going to host qualifiers on the 14th of June and the 19th of June. And we always kind of laugh about what it takes to get into the qualifier. We've seen 75s go home before, you know, taking 40 players, 75s, try again. Typically it's around 76, 77, but I'm a reasonable player, and I can't tell you whether or not I can qualify for the Firecracker or not. It's a very difficult event to qualify for.
It's incredible to think that there's that much good talent. Now, and it's not just good talent that you play well at your club or your local course. You're doing that to qualify. There's golf and there's tournament golf. We'll say it a million times and it'll always be true.
Oh, yeah.
That's low 70s. That's breaking par under pressure. Just to get into the field, just to get considered. Yeah. So that's a big deal.
If they're going to write your name and score up on a wall, you can add a couple shots to that most of the time, unless you've done it, you know, unless you're a battle tested tournament player, and there's several of those. But if I know my score is going up on the wall, I'm going to yip one here or there. I know that.
No doubt about it. No, and again, you mentioned the great thing about the Firecracker coming back is it's a sense of normalcy. It's a sense of a return to all the cool traditions we have. Like you said, Spring Partnership will be back. All the great junior tournaments that come to the city courses are going to be back again. Talk about just operations in general. I think the last time we talked a couple of months ago, you, like everybody, were seeing record numbers of tee times. It's just a matter of getting everybody in and managing the tee sheet, right? Are you still seeing those same patterns of crazy demand for tee times?
We are. Our weekend tee times are at as high a demand as I can remember since the late 90s. Weekday afternoons, we're starting to see some pockets where you can play. Okay. You know, weekday afternoons, weekday evenings, though, you're going to need to plan that out 3 and 4 days in advance. I don't care which one of our properties you're playing. You're going to need to plan it out 3 or 4 days in advance. We have the ability to get you out on the golf course on a waiting list basis, and it usually does not take that long. But as far as you know, shoring up tee time and making actual plans on what time you can get here and what time you leave, that needs to be done with some time in advance. For example, Kaiser tonight is booked until 11 minutes after 6 p.m.
Nice.
Gets dark about 8:25 right now. So, you know, we've got our sunset rate. You can come get your 9 holes in, but we've got reasonable times on Jimmy Clay that can be had today. You know, we have a spot for you to play even whenever we're covered up. We can get you out on the golf course because not everybody shows. We are still seeing really good traffic patterns. It's still a very exciting time to play. Our driving ranges, our practice facilities, they remain very busy, but we have space for you. The one thing that is really difficult to guess nowadays in golf is if somebody wants a piece of equipment, it's about a 3 or 4 telephone call process to where I call the manufacturer, find out, tell them, hey, May 15th. I mean, it's to the point now where even the big dogs that have always been there and always had product in stock, like the Titleists and the Pings of the world, they, you know, right now, if you want a dozen medium large players glove, you may be looking at June 1st before you get those on special order. Equipment's the same way. I had a driver that is 45 days out because they couldn't get the heads. And that's never a problem. It's always been a shafting problem for a special shaft. But right now they don't have the heads in stock, and the equipment manufacturers, one, they're doing the best they can, and two, they are recording record quarter after record quarter, and they've been doing that over the last 3 quarters. It's really an exciting time, but it's just baffling to me what's going on in the industry right now. It's crazy.
It really is. I mean, gone are the days pre-COVID. I mean, I remember when my kids were really little, I'd watch the golf tournaments. You usually, right, you know, they go from the golf tournaments to 60 minutes, and you know, these long summer days, I would say, you know what, screw it, I'm gonna go play Jimmy Clay and see how many holes I can get. There were times where I would get in, Steve, like 20, 21, 23 holes, because it would go. But now everybody's playing until the sun goes down. I mean, the least happy people in all of this are the guys that have to return the carts and get them back in the barn.
Yeah.
In the dark.
There was a time in the 90s that we joke about, or in the early 2000s, we played 18 holes, teed off at 1 o'clock. We played 18 holes. Then we went inside and said, hey, we want to go out for an emergency. And one of the guys said, yeah, that's 1:15. We'll get you out there in 1:15 from now. If you want. And it was 5:30 at night, 5:30 in the evening. It's like, I'm booked. You're not getting your emergency in.
There's no more showing up. I mean, yeah, you're really going to have to go back to the, what Butler Park's got, the little slide down ramp and put ball your ball shoot. Up and yeah, ball shoot and hope for the best. Yeah.
I saw your ball shoot on Facebook. We started whenever we had the Joe Ballinger short course, we started with a ball shoot there, but there was never that big of demand to require a ball shoot. But I love that concept. I'm originally from Copper's Cove. At one point in time, there was a ball shoot on that 9-hole track way back when.
it doesn't fit the motif anymore, but I grew up playing Memorial Park in Houston. They've upscaled multiple times since then, especially recently. But yeah, we had the ball shoot back then, back when I was a kid, back when juniors played for a buck and a quarter. I could show up with, get a few quarters from mom and have about 7 hours of daycare. And
I think now your non-resident rate at Memorial Park is going to run you about 140.
Oh yeah.
I think your non-resident rate is going to run you about 140.
Good for them, though. I have not played the course. I walked it with one of Tom Doak's associates, Mike Nuzzo, a good friend of mine. And right before it was grassed, you could tell what it was going to be and how different it was and how much better and different it was and how beguiling it was. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting second year to see what the tour players have to say about it, because I think they were pretty baffled by just how tough it is. And that was the question when Tom Doak got assigned or was awarded the job to do Memorial Park, is just how crazy were the greens going to be? How tough would it be to, not only tee to green, but getting it down into the hole? And I think it's going to take some getting used to. Now, the tour players, they figure out every course. You just give them 3 or 4 years, and those 15, 20 under years when the wind's not blowing hard always seem to happen. But it's interesting to see them play a Doak design for the first time for 4 rounds. But yeah, just back to the old concept of, walking up, showing up. That's another thing that's going to be tough. We talked about it off air is Butler Park is back. We braved opening day on Friday. We had a fivesome, which is probably one of the smaller groups out there. And, it's funny. We went, so we'll just go after lunch and see what happens. I mean, we were out there a good amount of time. I want to say it was probably 3 full hours out there. That's not going to be every day at Butler, but just to see what they've done out there. I don't know if you've been yet, but they've got the beer garden space. All the TVs had the Masters on. They let them stay open till 10 o'clock. The beer's cold. The vibe is really good and festive. It's going to be the place for a long time. I mean, I can't say enough about it.
I got a preview of it on the 6th, on Tuesday the 6th. So that was nice. A couple of days before the grand opening. I am ashamed to say that is the second time I've been on property and the first time that I had played the golf course. And I could not get over the greatness of what Butler Pitch and Putt is. It was so much fun to go out there. I was technically working, so I did not have my beer in hand, but to roll out there with a beer in hand, beer in pocket, and a 52 or a 56 and a putter and be able to get around the whole golf course. But at the same time, you're playing a golf course. They can trick that thing up, bring you to your knees if they wanted to, looking at the way they've redone those greens. Once those greens speed up and grow in better, it is going to be just a blast to go out there and play. And I'm sure they're going to have some events where they put those flag sticks in places that you just flat out can't get to. And that is going to be fun to go out there and watch. I put my name into the league group. I haven't financially committed yet, but I did sign up in the league group. And so I'm looking for a partner. If you're interested, some Tuesday night, we'll go play a little Butler league.
I can hold my own on Butler. Championship courses, that's another story. But I've always loved practicing the short game, so I do okay out there. So, yeah, we should do that. We should have some fun with that. It's a good place. I used to go out there under previous management. The lady would come on and turn on some water hoses, and that poodle would run around, zip around that place. And it's just different. I mean, it's one of those last, bastions of old Austin where it's just kind of kooky and you can be whoever you are, whether you got dreadlocks down the middle of your back or you're a tour player or some of these Austin celebrity. You never know who you're going to see, but you're going to see somebody you know at Butler.
It's like playing football or at a game at House Park. You see skyscrapers on one side, but you see the hills on the other. I mean, it's the whole concept. I always knew Butler was neat. I knew it had a great following, but I'm ashamed that was second time I've been on property and first time I played it, but it was truly a special experience. And we were just there. There was just, five of us playing, getting a preview. I can't wait to go out there one evening with the lights on, the music at a reasonable level, and just people watching. The people watching out there has to be fantastic.
I think it's going to be everything, different layout, but everything Goat Hill's done in Oceanside in Southern California, where they just sort of brought the community together. It's about golf, but it's also just about pulling community together and doing some good things and having some great times. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn. I'm Carl Mickelson. He is our guest host, Steve Hammond. And you're listening to our Starter Shack segment. The show, as you know, is sponsored by PGA Tour Superstore. Steve, the Starter Shack has no sponsor. So last week, one of the segments was sponsored by those spicy nuts that you get in the nicer clubhouses. You know, the little wasabi, little dose of, you know. So we're gonna dedicate this week's Starter Shack to something I remember when I was a kid. You traveled to different golf courses, and the range balls just wouldn't say range or wouldn't have the stripe or be a different color. I'm gonna dedicate the Starter Shack today to the range balls that used to say stolen from Jimmy Clay golf course. I love that. My brother and I would love those because they would just say you felt like you've committed a serious crime if you got one of those in the bag.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you had to get one of them just for the sake of it. But let's jump into some Masters talk, Steve. We've talked local for a bit of time, but give me your impressions, what you like. We kind of texted back and forth about what we saw. You had some impressions. Obviously, Augusta National is the kind of golf course that's going to reward great ball striking. And when it's set up firm and fast, like it was for much of the 2021 Masters, it's going to punish, you know, stuff that's less than precise. So it makes sense. It's not a shock that Hideki Matsuyama won a major. We wondered when it was going to happen. Turned out to be last week. Well-deserving. What were your overall impressions and maybe some specific takeaways from what you liked about the Masters?
Well, to start with, I really enjoyed Hideki's run there at the end. The way he played the backside on Saturday, and I mean, that's when you make your move, and he's about the only one in the field that decided to do that. And that's why we're talking about him today. I didn't know what his nerves were like. And when he fanned that opening tee ball on number one on Sunday, I sent a text. I said, this guy may shoot 80 today.
We didn't know, right? I mean, that was a pivotal moment, him recovering from that. Because at first I thought, you hardly ever see anybody have to re-tee on the first hole. You've seen people go right. But that looked bad enough that might have been gone.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a pivotal moment in the tournament.
Yeah, and, you know, he opened up with a bogey, but he and that bogey was a great bogey, if you ask
Absolutely.
Me. I've been in the trees before and taken snowman, but he opens with a bogey, one hands it off the tee ground, you know, just looked as bad as you can imagine, and then he immediately bounces back with a birdie. At that point in time, it looked like he was a lot more in control of his ball, and he wasn't hitting it incredibly close. I think he made a bomb on hole four or five for par. But then he closes out with birdies on eight and nine. And at that point in time, you know that it's his tournament to lose. The guy plays incredibly calm golf. He doesn't show a great deal of emotion one way or another. Xander tried to scare him there, especially whenever Hideki, you know, airmails 15 green and hits it into that water. He still winds up making six from there, which I thought was a really good six because it's a short flag stick. He's playing from one hazard with water on the other side. That ball could easily, you hit it too firm, that ball could go back in that water on the other side of the pond. Yeah, he may have left it short, but that shot was 3 feet away from being absolutely perfect. Overall, the guy is fun to watch play. He pauses at the top of the swing so long, you think your internet may be buffering. I just think he's fun to watch play because if you YouTube Hideki bad shots, he hits some of the most perfect shots. But as soon as he's made contact with the ball, he's like, oh, no. And the announcers have no
idea.
One
hand off. Yeah.
Yeah. The announcers have no idea how bad that shot's going to be. And it winds up 8 feet from the hole.
It feels like, you know, 5-10 years since he should have won his first major because his ball striking's so good. I said the same thing about Henrik. If you go watch Henrik Stenson on the range, it's like, how does this guy not have 12 majors? Because he doesn't miss irons. He hits, you know, hit it so perfectly. So Hideki's another one of those guys. And there's some guys in this field. If you look at Justin Thomas, John Rahm, Xander Schauffele, those are the kind of ball strikers you would expect to have multiple green jackets at some point in the year. It's just interesting. You mentioned something about heart and guts and the kind of golf course Augusta National is to come down that second nine stretch. a robot's not going to win Augusta National. You've got to take some chances. You've got to have some guts. Some players showed us that fortitude, you know, whether they pulled it off or not. And some people didn't, you know, we go, it's funny. I've struck up through business. I've struck up a good friendship and working relationship with Chip Beck. And they always talk about, you know, his time, you know, laying up at Augusta National. That's the thing they point to in his career, yeah, other than his 59. And, it's always interesting to see how those guys play 13 and 15 and who gets, you know, who takes on the risk reward.
Yeah. It's, you know, if you look on hole number 13, after the rain on 13 on Saturday,
yeah,
everybody was playing to the backside of that green and everybody was three putting. I would bet you 60% of the people that hit to the back of that green, three putted 13 on Saturday after the rain. That just goes to show how in tune these guys are with what the green speed is supposed to be. And then a little bit of rain threw them off. You know, you're talking about ball striking and heart. And, you know, I was disappointed in Justin Thomas that it almost looked like he gave up and wanted to go home Saturday afternoon. You're not going to win tons of majors that way.
Right.
He's going to dominate them on pure talent from time to time. And he's going to win more than the PGA Championship that he has, without a doubt. But it just seemed to me that based on his body language, based on the looks on his face, that he didn't have any interest in being there. The funny thing is the guy shoots even par, even not even caring out there at that golf course. He shoots a 72 hole even par, but it looked to me that he lost interest somewhere about the turn on Saturday afternoon.
What do you make of the way Justin Rose played the golf course, Steve? I mean, he's figured out, whether it's through statisticians or experience or whatever, where the safe places are to hit it into the fairways, to have good angles into the green. And then he always seems to hit it into the safest spot, whether that leaves a 10-foot putt or a 50-foot putt. I just don't know that you're – as competitive as it is now, I don't know if you can play robotic golf at Augusta National. It's such an emotional, passionate course. It pulls on your emotion. It dares you to take risks. I don't know if you can get a lot of top tens plotting your way around that golf course. I don't know if you can win without being a little bit of a daredevil.
I truly don't think you can. And I think that's more evident by Justin, even on Friday and even on Saturday. The guy starts off with a 65 and lays down two even pars. And it wasn't because of bad golf. I think it was just because of conservative golf. And even playing conservative golf, there's going to be bad swings that ink themselves in there. And so if you don't make enough birdies to move on the leaderboard, your birdies are just covering the few mistakes that you have. I was really excited after Thursday's round. I'm like, man, this guy's playing some golf. I think the stats said it on Thursday. In the fall, the field was 254 over par. And this Thursday, they were 20 under par.
Right.
That's like a 270 shot swing on basically the same field.
It's incredible. it's incredible. Yeah, basically
how's that
the same.
Possible?
How is that? You know, the conditions were way, way different. But I got to tell you that Scott 65, we talked about it last week, but because that afternoon draw and the greens were getting crusty and really fast, you saw guys chipping balls back into the water and a lot of things that were really out of character for the best players in the world. I mean, that 65 looked like a 59 compared to the way everybody else was playing in that afternoon draw. And then he goes out mid-morning and, like you said, shoots a kind of mediocre 72. He could have had a boat race because he got the favorable. Usually in Augusta, you never think there's a morning late that's very pivotal. Larger fields in the U.S. Open, sometimes you think you can get screwed on morning late or early late tee times or late early, whichever one. Phil used to dread the particular ones when those would come up on him. But I felt like Rose had an opportunity to really, you know, spread eagle field, and it just didn't happen.
Well, I think he had two opportunities. The first one being the great draw that he had. The second one is after the rain delay. That's when the flagsticks are further taken.
Right.
With the softer conditions, a little bit slower with softer conditions. And he didn't capitalize on either one of those. And I think that, you know, ultimately is what is what hurt him.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he gave up, but he continued to play mediocre golf on Sunday as well, and finishes, you know, seventh place, 5 under par.
Lots more names I want to get to. We'll do that when we get back. Let's take a break. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn. I'm Carl Mickelson. He is Steve Hammond. We'll see you in a bit.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Welcome back to Playing Through on the Horn. You are listening to the Saturday Morning Golf Show. Ordinarily, it's with Bob Ballew, the great local media talent Bob Ballew, and myself, Carl Mickelson. But this morning, Steve Hammond is sitting in the Bob Ballew chair, taking his spot this week. Bob's playing Band in Dunes. I think Steve Hammond and I both wish we were part of that. Somehow we missed that invite, but nevertheless, hope he's having a good time, making a lot of birdies out there. Have you been to Band in Dunes?
No. You know, the funny thing is we were talking about our dream places. My dream places are not on the coast. They are not in the wind. They are not with fast running out fairway.
Death Valley?
The pebbles, the spyglasses, the Band in Dunes, you can have those because I will go there and shoot a million. But I do want to go to Pine Valley. I do want to go play Augusta National. Those are my two that I would just really enjoy playing, enjoy the opportunity to play. But now everything up there on that West Coast in the wind, now you can have it.
It can play tough. You know, that's the thing is people marvel at Pebble Beach, but the one thing that gets missed because you're looking at all the scenery is the tour players, when they play the AT&T, have about 3 or 4 layers of clothes on.
Yeah.
You're constantly going from quarter zip to rain jacket to, chicken skin, but you never quite know what it's going to be. Yeah. So
that's the
challenge.
The Pebbles, everybody says they want to play Pebble and everybody says they want to play Augusta. And the reason why that they say that is because they know those golf courses. They've seen them for so long on television and, it's just the familiarity with the property is why people are dying to play that, especially those two. I think those make everybody's bucket list but mine. But they make everybody's list of courses that they would just love to play because they know the property.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Yeah, there's an intimacy. I think people that have never even been to Augusta National feel an intimacy with the golf course, even though they've never walked it, just because we've seen so much of it. Now the camera angles are even better. They were using drones this year and showing bird's eye stuff that they've never even seen before. And, you know, for years, it would just be the same settings. So, I mean, when we were kids, we never even knew what the first nine looked like.
We had no idea. You never saw it. I was about to bring that up. Is you never saw it. And now the approach to hole number 3 and the approach to hole number 11, those are two shots that I just love to hit. I would love to try and hit those two shots.
You've got to be so precise on 3, and then 11 just scares the heck out of you.
It's begging for you to pull it left into that water.
Absolutely.
It moves left. It's the left flag stick, left water. It is doing everything it can to get you to smother that ball, and that's why you see so many fan it out to the right, because they got that hook guard on.
Absolutely, and I would too. I would find a way to hold that club face open as long as I could. I tell you what, just to live another day, because having walked that, there's this huge expanse of beautifully carpeted grass between 11 and 12 tees, so you're safe out there. It's not the easiest shot by any means, but I think I would. That's the way I'd have to go. I don't know any way to be aggressive on the 11th hole.
Now, especially whenever you're trying to protect, it could add up in a hurry there.
Let's get back into it. You know, it's funny to watch the national coverage of the Masters. We'll just get back into a little Masters talk here. I'm playing through. Everybody's like, "Well, who the heck is Will Zalatoris? What universe did this kid fall up?" I'm like, he was a number one ranked junior for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, he was one of the highest recruits, went to Wake Forest, somehow slipped through John Fields' radar for whatever reason. They've been recruiting so hot. When you can leave a Will Zalatoris on the table, that tells you how good, Coach Fields has it going here. But No, he was one of the top ranked amateur players for a long time. So you saw him coming. He didn't immediately come out and do what some players do, like Jordan Spieth, and immediately contend and get on the Ryder Cup team. He's had to bide his time on Korn Ferry. But if you look, it's funny because we work with an equipment company in my day job. So we were tracking a guy named Taylor Pendrith, who's going to be – he might be the Will Zalatoris of 2022. He's playing a lot of Canadian tour events, but the kid doesn't miss. So once Pendrith got up to Korn Ferry, I'm like, holy cow. Zalatoris just either wins every week or top three. So it's just a matter of time before he gets on the PGA. I didn't know it would be the Masters. Yeah, but it was clearly a matter of time that he was going to come on the PGA Tour and not have any issues.
Now he's got over $3 million this year. I think he's like top 25 in the world, maybe moved up a little bit more. The guy hits his irons. They kept talking about how well he hits his irons, so I kept listening for him. And I never heard a toe shot, never heard a heel shot. That guy just hits the ball so crisp. I think, you know, they kept talking about it. And he's the one that started it saying, hey, if I'm dumb enough to lead, why can't I be dumb enough to win? This kid knows what he's doing. He knows where he's at. I think he is a competitor. I think he's a grinder. And it's only a matter of years. And not whenever I say years, I mean 2 to 3 before he starts making Jordan Spieth waves like Spieth did in 15, 16.
Really feel that way. I think he's a special player. I go back to his amateur pedigree. I look at how he came up the hard way. I mean, there's a different kind of approach and dynamic to the Korn Ferry Tour than there is a PGA Tour. There are tough setups, but you kind of know what you're getting. They play the same courses every year. 9 under might win, 23 under might win. But on the Korn Ferry, Steve, you might shoot 20 under and not have enough money to cover your expenses to next week. I mean, you've got to be hungry. I mean, you have to walk on with your spikes on, hoping and believing that you can get 30 under or 25 or something insane, because those guys are hungry out there.
Every tour, everybody is so incredibly good. Korn Ferry, of course, they're shooting incredibly low numbers. And I don't know if that's because the golf course is just that they can find a play. It's not easy to find a place to play. But right. Those golf courses, they're just not hard enough for that talent level.
Right.
But if you can go out there and you can win on the Korn Ferry Tour, I feel like you can win anywhere. I know you can win in Europe, but I feel like if you can win in any of these major tours, you can win anywhere. Definitely win on the PGA Tour. Or even our National Open or the British Open. It's the talent level out there is beyond what I can imagine.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Yeah, so I just have a feeling Will Zalatoris is going to be around a long time. I think, you know, some things happen prematurely like this, and then they either never come back around or they do. I'm not going to say he's going to be top three, top five, top 10 every year, but I think this did a lot for his confidence, and boy, that, you know, stupid enough to contend, stupid enough to think he can win. That almost sounds like it's ripped out of a Dan Jenkins book. I mean, that's almost too good. That's like, I mean, that's a line that's for the ages. I mean, and it's right. And it's, you know, it speaks to what you talk about. Do you have the guts to do what it takes to contend in these tournaments and get into position and be the guy where other guys are content to kind of use their strokes gain numbers and what their stat guy told them. And, you know, you can almost, that was one of the things that concerned me a little bit. I mean, and again, I have nowhere near the talent or the expertise, but I mean, when you started to see the gurus walk courses, and, you know, I was very closely with Dave Pelz and Phil Mickelson, and they would talk about, you know, just trying to shoot 70 at the U.S. Open. Just if you can shoot 70 and, you know, well, you know, one under or even is going to win every year. Like, what about the year Brooks Koepka went to Erin Hills and played it like it was the FedEx St. Jude? You know what I mean? You never know when it's going to be that year. So I think you have to have a mode and an ability and a mindset that can go aggressive when they give you the golf course.
Yeah. A lot of times they say you take what the golf course gives you, but you really have to take out there. Mm-hmm. The conservative play with a lead, that's fine. But if you're trying to win the Masters, you could throw conservatism out the window. You're going to have to attack some stuff. So I think that Zalatoris did that.
That's what I liked about his game. He relied on his ball striking to go to the fat parts of the green when he needed to, but when he needed to be aggressive and make birdies, he knew how to do that too.
What did he have to lose?
Yeah, exactly. So I think the stat stuff works both ways. The probabilities, you know, I think sometimes you got to take the green light when it's there. We call this second segment on playing through the breakfast ball a chance to reload and maybe walk back something that you'd like to walk back. And I picked Justin Thomas last week, and we covered that in the first segment. Is something just wasn't all there with JT because he is a strokes gained beast. And so is Zalatoris, so is Xander Schauffele, so is John Rahm. So some of our picks hit last week, but some of them didn't. I mean, the guy that I picked to win it all, and I promised Munson maybe more than a year ago to pick Xander Schauffele in every major till he wins one because he's never out of the mix. And I finally deviated, and it didn't serve me well at all. I could have stayed with Xander and had a much more thrilling viewing of this year's Masters. But so I'm going to walk that one back. I don't know who you picked. We didn't even talk about what your picks were because we just got you on this week, but. Did anything cash in for you, or did you make any swings and misses on your Masters predictions?
Absolutely nothing cashed in for me. I thought Dustin Johnson would run away with it again. I thought Jordan Spieth would be a contender. I had no
which
idea.
Which he was, yeah.
He was.
He did about what we thought, right?
Yeah, but that was just like I think that was more of a half-court shot to pick Jordan Spieth because he has been playing so poorly for Jordan Spieth's terms for the last few years. And he's strung together, you know, a good 3 months now. You know, it's just kind of a, like I said, it was a half court shot to pick Jordan Spieth. And I was very surprised by it, but I was disappointed to see Dustin Johnson not make the cut. When you talk about Schauffele at some point in time and Finau, at some point in time, we're going to start scratching our heads and say, do these guys have the, I don't want to say guts and don't want to say heart or
it's like a killer instinct, right? It's like that. It's that thing Michael Jordan has where he loves you, but he might have to cut your throat.
Do they got it? Do they have it? That's the biggest question. Xander was on a run. His shot on 16 where he made the triple was 5 feet away from being perfect. It was 5 feet away from going 11 under.
It wasn't a mental mistake in real time, Steve. That felt like a mental mistake, you know, going too far left, being too far aggressive at the time when he didn't need to be, because for as little fuel as Hideki leaked all week, he was leaking a little bit right then. It would have been great. Could he have stuck one and, you know, had a little tap in or something like that. That would have been a great all time moment. And maybe that's what he was going for. It was good to hear them that he felt like he executed the shot that he wanted. They just miscalculated the wind. Yeah. I don't feel so bad about that. That's just a bad beat. And, you know, the wind swirls there at Augusta. It's easy to be, you know, armchair on that and say, you know, you could absolutely just aim a little right and live with it. I mean, you know, what kills you is a bogey on that hole. He still would have been in it because Hideki wound up well bogeying that hole, and then they could have still dueled it out on 17 and 18.
Right. You know, the funny thing is we're talking microns here because he two-shot swung him on 15, which could have been a three-shot swing pretty easily. But he didn't like it as soon as it came off the club face, or he didn't like it, you know, 50 yards off the club face. I felt like he had to go for it. Like he had to go at that flag stick because he's not playing for second, and he a little bit had Hideki on the ropes, or may have felt like he had him on the ropes. That's a great opportunity. If you hit a perfect shot, that ball is going to roll right there by the flag stick on 16 every time. But, you know, it just didn't work out for him. But how many times is this going to happen to Xander? How many top 10s is Xander going to have, or Finau going to have, or Rahm going to have? I'm ready for one of those guys to win one so we can get back to talking about Fowler.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah, and yeah, I don't even know. Yeah, it's interesting. I think Fowler kind of missed his time. We don't talk about him as the best guy be without a major anymore. Now it is Xander and Rahm, and Kuchar might have even missed his window. You know, it's an interesting how fast that goes. Where, you know, the heat's almost off Ricky anymore, but it's not for the reasons that he'd like it to be.
Ricky is a phenomenal player. He's a polarizing character. He's a good-looking guy. The equipment manufacturers are going to continue to love him.
Yeah.
And he's still going to be great for the tour, great for the junior golf industry. There's so many great things about Ricky. You just feel bad that he hadn't been able to get it done. I know that in the 16 Ryder Cup, he was one of my favorite players to follow. It was great watching him play, and I'm always going to love Ricky, and I feel bad for him, but I think his time is probably passing him by.
You know, we're right up against a break. I'm gonna have you think about it, but there's another guy we're letting off the hook. I mean, the Masters is the time to make your legacy. We're into major season right now, and it's 2021. We're having to ask ourselves, who are the dominant players of this era? Who are the guys that are going to stand up? And we talked last week about how if JT and Jordan could have gotten into the final pairing or the next to final pairing, it would have felt kind of like some of those, what we never got from Tiger and Phil. It would have felt like Tom Watson and Jack Nicklaus, or, you know, some of those great pairings that we saw, Trevino and Jack, and all those things that happened in the 70s and, you know, definitely in the 60s and a little bit into the 80s with Seve and Greg Norman and some of those great players. But you just don't get great rivalries, and you're not getting a lot of guys dominating. Even though you're seeing some dominant swings and some dominant athletes right now, you're not getting the gains, if you will, in terms of skins on the wall in majors. So think about that through the break. And who really needs to raise up and start thinking about their long-term career legacy. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn. We'll be back in just a little bit.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Belew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Welcome back to the final segment of Playing Through on the Horn. I am Carl Mickelson. With us is Steve Hammond, Director of Golf for the City of Austin Courses, Jimmy Clay, Roy Kaiser, and Lyons Municipal. Very good to have you with us, Steve. It's been a fun talk about the Masters. We pretty much talked about the Masters for an hour, but that's what we do here. You know, people want the golf talk, and we promise it to them. But the Masters lived up to its hype. I mean, my wife always laughs at me right around Super Bowl time. You know, the tinkle in the piano comes. You'll be watching a football playoff game, and the Masters commercials start off, and I'll put my hand on my heart and get one of those like far away 1,000-yard stares. And she's like, "You're a moron. You're an absolute." But that old Masters feeling came back this year. I didn't go. It's been 10 years since I've gone. I'm talking about going with a friend next year. It's been way too long since I've been to a Masters, but the telecast brings that feeling back year in and year out. If you don't like the leaderboard, you didn't like your favorite guy didn't win the Masters, even though the crowd, the patrons were smaller in numbers this year, it felt like a Masters again to me.
It absolutely did. And I've got the same thing going on in my house. I find myself shushing those that are inside, asking them to be quiet. I definitely, you know, I got up early Sunday, mowed the yard, knocked out stuff, and my wife, of course, asked, "You gonna sit on the couch all day?" I'm like, "Not all day, but just till 6:30 or so."
Pretty good chunk of the day. You might find me here.
Yeah. And it's a great golf topic. It once again, we know the golf course, we know the history behind everything. It is by far my favorite sporting event, with the exception of the Ryder Cup. But I just absolutely love it. And one of the things that you know, when Hideki's caddy put that empty flagstick into the 72nd hole and bowed down the fairway, I loved that so much that it hurt.
It went right to your core, didn't it?
It just went right to my core, and I don't even understand how much the bow means in the Japanese culture, and I still just, I felt it, and it was truly, truly just one of those deals that they will play over and over again in Masters promos from now to the end of time.
It's good to see it mean that much to the players, because I remember, it's interesting going, the first time I went was 2001, and you got to wait a little while to get through the gates, and you wait in line, you get there, you go through the turnstiles, and there's the merchandise and kind of some museum type exhibits. And then once the crowd kind of parts, you just see this emerald ocean of just green and hills as far as the eye can see. And
oh man,
I was caught off guard and got choked up. I was genuinely choked up. I mean, it's just like, this is what a 3-year-old must feel like walking through Disneyland. I mean, it's one of those things. And to see that expression on people's faces for that, I think I've been 5 times. And it's to see the people's look on their faces for the first time. I don't think there's very much as an adult other than the birth of your kids. Or there's just nothing amazes us anymore, but that place truly does. But to see that the players have that same feeling about their traditions and the place and the history and just whatever blows through those pines is really, really special. So it means a lot. But I wanted to talk this segment about legacies. It's 2021. The Masters just went by again. We're in an era of great players. You talked about your expectations for Dustin Johnson. I want to talk about mine for Rory McIlroy. These are guys you would think now, double-digit majors is something that Tiger spoiled us on. I mean, he got there so fast that you thought, yeah, well, 5 more guys are going to do that in my lifetime. We may not see that. I think we talked about it a little bit off air. The depth of talent is so good that these kinds of guys kind of knock you off. You expect that Rahm's going to get one, Xander's going to get hit. Well, that's just fewer. That means Rory might not get to 12 or whatever that number is. But you look at a guy like Rory who needs the Masters to complete his career Grand Slam. You look at some of these guys like Dustin Johnson and Rory, who should be winning one a year at this phase. I mean, with what they do with the ball when they're on, it's a lot to ask. I mean, you can't win every major at will, but Tiger sure seemed like he could. Is there that much of a chasm between what Tiger Woods did and the talent level that Rory's got right now, that Dustin Johnson's got right now? Some of these players that we look at as truly elite. I mean,
I think the overpowering, the power talent level, that these guys have off the teeing ground, the distance is not what, Tiger was pretty much the longest guy,
right?
Back whenever he was making so much hay.
And the best recovery shot guy, and one of the best ball straight, guy from 190 in, I mean, maybe the driver was the weakness, but his putting was lethal.
Yeah, and so to have that full package, that's how he was able to dominate, because he did have the full package. The depth of the field is one of those things that's going to keep people from winning at the pace that Tiger won at. And don't get me wrong, Tiger still is, the greatest active player, with the exception of the current injury, but I still think he is the current greatest active player and will probably go down as the greatest in history.
But
you've got these players like Thomas and Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy that if they're teeing it up and you're placing bets or you have a pool of people to pick from, all four of those guys make it every time. It doesn't matter what golf course, it doesn't matter the weather. It doesn't matter that Brooks has two bad knees or whatever. They're gonna make your picks every single time because we expect so much out of them. What we're not taking into account a lot of times is how hard this game is.
Right.
And, Jordan proved that over the last 4 years where he just hasn't done a whole lot to make us go. He did enough to make us think, hey, what's wrong with Jordan? That's what he did, is we're like, hey, what's nothing was wrong with him. He was making
nice money, living a good life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
He's just a millionaire. Tough problems to have, but, He underwent some changes, refocused, and it looks like he's back to being another force again. So I think that Rory and Dustin is one Masters away from, or one major away from a major championship, if you know what I'm saying. He won the last one.
Right.
He just didn't make the cut. Maybe he had a bad week. Is there anything wrong with him? I don't think so, but we do expect more out of him. Week in and week out, it's like you expect one of those five to win every single week, and it's just not possible. And that's what makes it so great.
I think we're just in a different kind of golden era where there's so much talent. I mean, we haven't even talked about the young guns of Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, Sung J.M., Matthew Wolf, that whole group. I mean, those guys aren't even anywhere. They're not even sniffing 25. I mean, some of those guys can barely even buy beer. And we're talking about them as the elite players in the game. It's just happening. It's just turning over so fast. And there's great guys in their mid-20s, late-20s, 30s, up into 40 years old. So, again, it's a rich talent pool. It's what we've seen in other sports. It's when there's so much parity in the NFL. Is it boring, or is just everybody so freaking good? And I think that's where we are with the PGA Tour. We're right up against the top of the hour and the next show on the horn, the Big Ugly Tailgate. It's been a fun time talking golf with you, Steve Hammond. I can't thank you enough for being on Playing Through with us. And
thanks for having me. It's a great experience.
Good time. And we'll come out and see you, Jimmy Clay, Roy Kaiser. And glad to hear things are going well. But we're going to wrap up this edition of Playing Through. I am Carl Mickelson. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll leave you with this. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everybody. We'll see you next time.